think aside from a person spending his time learning, the hallmark of the yeshiva bacher, of the ben Torah, of the ben Aliyah, would be that he knows how to daven. That he spends time davening, that he davens seriously, and that he has a serious connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu through his davening. So the issue that we have with davening, unfortunately, is that we have many issues with davening. We have difficulties with davening. And each one of the issues, I don't like the word, but each one of the issues that we have with davening really deserves a schmooze in and of itself. But I want to go through a couple of issues, a couple of questions that people ask typically. I want to try to deal with them in a quick way and then move through it. Obviously, each one of these things takes a lot of thought. Each thing that I'm going to bring up is an issue that may have many more answers than one answer, one way of looking at it. But at least we'll get someplace. I'd like to use Parshas Lech Lecha as a vehicle to do that. So we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu, Lech Lecha, he should leave. And the funny thing is that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avraham Avinu to leave, he doesn't tell him where to go. So it's a difficulty. How do you tell somebody to leave? And what's a person supposed to do? Where am I going? He doesn't know where he's supposed to go. Of course, the Mefarshim deal with that. Where's Avraham Avinu supposed to go? Just go. El Ha'aretz Asher Areka, I'll tell you where you're going, but not now. So there are of course Chazalim that deal with that. I just wanted to say one thing. I think probably the most difficult problem that a person has with tefillah, the biggest question, the question that comes up the most often, is that we say to ourselves, if I really needed something and it were good for me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is benevolent, that's what we're told. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to do what's best for us, we know that. And if it was really necessary and good for me, then why do I need to ask for it? I need to remind him that I need it. He doesn't know that I need it. He doesn't realize how much I want it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't. Come on, you're talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He knows everything. He's omnipotent. He's omniscient. He knows everything. So why do I have to ask for it? It seems a little redundant. It seems a little repetitive. It seems a little unnecessary. But that's a mistake. It's a big mistake. Let me explain to you why it's a mistake. There's a pasuk in Parshas Bereishis we read a couple of weeks ago. There's a pasuk in Parshas Bereishis. The pasuk tells us that there was no man around. This was before Adam was created. There was no man around. Ba'adam ayin la'avodas Adama. There was no man around, and therefore it didn't rain. What does that mean? It didn't rain. Rashi on the spot says over there. Rashi says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was waiting for someone to ask for the rain. Now I ask you. Is rain necessary or is rain not necessary? Is rain good or is rain not good? Is it important to have rain? Do we need to remind HaKadosh Baruch Hu that maybe we need rain? HaKadosh Baruch Hu realizes, you understand, if there's no rain, then nothing's going to grow. So he doesn't know that already. But the pasuk says, "Va'adam ayin," there was no person to ask for it. There was no person to ask for it. The Chazon Ish used to say very often, when people would come to him and tell him that something was wrong, that there was a major issue in Klal Yisrael, that there was a dangerous time, the Chazon Ish used to say, obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs our tefillos. Obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants our tefillos. What does that mean? That means that we look at things backwards sometimes. Sometimes we look at things backwards. It seems to us that there's a need, and therefore in order to deal with the need, what we need to do is we need to daven. And then hopefully, by davening, we'll solve the problem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help us out. Whatever it is that we're missing, we'll get. Whatever it is that we lost, we'll replace, because we daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and of course HaKadosh Baruch Hu do whatever he wants, and he'll give to us what we need. But sometimes that's really backwards. Sometimes it's exactly the opposite. And sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes a lack so that we should ask. Sometimes we forget to ask for a while. Sometimes it's been a long time since we've actually communicated with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's been a long time since we've talked to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to say, you know what, I miss you a little bit. And the way he says, I miss you a little bit, is he causes it to be important for you to start talking to him. And when all of a sudden it becomes important for you to start talking to him, you renew that relationship. When you renew that relationship, we've gotten back to where we need to get to. The Chazon Ish used to say, if something bad is going on, obviously, it must be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to daven. It's not that in order to solve the problems, we'll daven. It's the message that we get from there being a problem sometimes, is that maybe the reason that there's a problem is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is waking us up and telling us, you haven't talked to me in a little while. You haven't spoken to me in a little while. I can't tell you how often as a parent, as a Rebbe, there are things that I want to give somebody, but it's much more important than me giving it to him is him asking me. And I'll hold it back and say, you know what? If he wants it, he'll ask me. And if he asks me for it, I'll be thrilled to give it to him. But I'm not going to give it to him until he asks me for it. Let's see if he asks. If he cares, he'll ask. And then, of course, I'll give it to him. If he doesn't really care, it's not really important for me to give it to him then. Only if he'll ask for it. What's really important there is the communication, is the desire, is the need. If you're showing that there is a need, then I want it. Then I want to give it to you. If you don't, if it's not important to you, it's not important to you. It's not even worth it for me. It's hollow if I give it to you. It's hollow. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us minds. And a mind is a funny thing. The Bali Musar tells us that, you know, the minds are extremely powerful, and we have this really, really powerful thing that's extremely dangerous in our minds. It's extremely dangerous. But it's also extremely useful. And that dangerous thing that we have in our minds is our imagination. We all know that our imaginations could lead us places that we really probably shouldn't be. We have wonderful imaginations, some better than others, but we all have powerful imaginations. At first glance, I would tell you imagination is not a good idea. You know, your mind, don't let your mind wander. If your mind wanders, it's not such a good idea. It's dangerous. You know, the human mind just wanders in bad places. But it's really an extremely powerful tool for Avodas Hashem, an imagination. Because very often we're stuck someplace. We don't understand something 100%. And if we used our imagination just through our life experience, obviously the more life experience you have, the better. But we all have life experience. And even if we're young, our life experience is unbelievable. We use it a little bit, use our imagination a little bit, we can understand things that maybe otherwise we wouldn't understand. So I'd like to do that for a second. I'd like to paint you a picture using my imagination. This is just my opinion and my imagination. Maybe it will resonate with you, maybe it won't, but let's give it a shot. I want to communicate with you. There's really no point in me communicating with you if you're not hearing what I'm saying. If everybody here had their heads down, and we're fast asleep, and I would be talking. So at some point, I probably would say, I feel like I'm talking to the wall, because I am. The reason why we use that muscle of talking to the wall is because normally the wall doesn't respond. Normally the wall doesn't change. The wall doesn't like what I say. It doesn't dislike what I say. It's just a wall. So if everyone's fast asleep, then I haven't really accomplished anything. So that's a difficulty we have in communication. When we deal with talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so yes, I say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to hear from you. He wants to hear from you. He's asking to hear from you. He's making something difficult sometimes so that you should speak to him. Yeah, but I don't feel like I'm communicating with him because I don't hear a response. I don't hear HaKadosh Baruch Hu answering me. I don't hear any reaction from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I feel like I'm talking to nothing. You know what? Havdil, a billion havdalos, I don't even know how to say it enough. Other religions, they have things they can hold in their hands when they daven, when they pray. They have things they can hold in their hands. And in a certain way, and this is a scary thing to say, I'm a little jealous of them, because there's something real. We don't have that. We don't have that. Everything with us is totally ephemeral. We have this idea about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We can't hold anything in our hands. We have no pictures. We don't sit in front of the Beis Medrash and put up a giant picture of something that we all focus on. All right? It's even dangerous. You should know it's dangerous in a certain sense to go daven by the Kosel Maravi. Because we're not davening to the Kosel, and that's really what you want to do. We got something. Finally, we got something in front of us. No, we don't. We don't have something. That's just a holy place. Maybe we'll talk about it soon. But that's not something to daven to. I always see these. You see these tourists come there, these geisha tourists, these Japanese tourists, and they come, they put their hands on the wall, and it's like, what's the guy thinking? He's praying to the wall, you know? It's nothing. It's worthless. It's worse than worthless. It's nothing. All right? But we don't have anything. So what am I davening to? Who am I talking to? So I just want to use just an idea, again, with my imagination. Let's imagine for a second, there's a better mashal than the one I'm going to give to you. I don't want to say it now, but this one I think is a close second. Just imagine for a second if there was a father who had a child, a son who had grown up and went off to war. So he's in Iraq fighting a war. He's in Afghanistan. He's fighting a war. Just imagine a wife whose husband is off in war. Or today's day and age, the husband whose wife is off in war. All right? The child, the 8-year-old child whose father is off fighting in Afghanistan. Okay? Now bear with me. They get a message. The people stateside get a message. Their loved one, their husband, their father, their son, whatever it would be, is coming home. But he's only coming home for an hour. He'll be home for an hour. He has to pick up some information, and he'll be home for an hour. Now, unfortunately, he's perfectly okay. He's perfectly healthy. But unfortunately, he has to pick up some real classified information, and while he's stateside, he can't be in contact with anyone except people from the military, let's say. He can't be in contact with anyone. But he's coming to the States. So just imagine you lived in St. Louis, Missouri, and or someone lived in St. Louis, Missouri, and their father was coming home, this 8-year-old kid, his father was coming home, this wife, somebody's sitting there, and their loved one is coming home, and he's going to be in Fort Bragg for an hour. But he won't be able to communicate with his loved one. The little girl won't be able to talk to her father. Won't be able to. It's not possible. Right now, it's not possible. For whatever reason, they've cordoned him off. He can't be talked to. He's perfectly healthy. He's perfectly fine, but he won't be able to talk to him. But he'll be in Fort Bragg for an hour. He hasn't been home in a year and a half. And he won't be home probably for another year and a half. But he'll be in Fort Bragg for an hour. What does the little girl do? What does the wife do? What does the father do? What do? They say, wow, that's really disappointing. Imagine that, they're home, and I'm not going to be able to talk to them. They're going to be in Fort Bragg, and Fort Bragg is in Texas. They're going to be in Texas for an hour. I'm in St. Louis. There's no point in me going, because I'm not going to be able to talk to them anyway. I think every single person in this room would agree with me that if you were in that situation, you would pick yourself up, and you'd go to Fort Bragg. But I know I'm not going to be able to talk to them. Let's just close our minds to the option of maybe they'll change their minds when I get there and they'll let me see them. They're not letting you see them. But you'd pick yourself up and you'd go. And you'd get as close as possible to the place where the person was. And just imagine, for argument's sake, that the person was in that room over there, the back of the Beis Medrash. We're in the front. We can't get there. What would you do? What would that little girl do? What would she do? She probably would plaster herself against the wall. She probably would get as close as she could to that wall. She can't talk to her father. They're not letting her. Father's only here for an hour. But for that hour, for that amount of time, they would get as close as possible. And the communication that would be going on between her and her father would be unbelievable. Both of them know. The father maybe knows his daughter is outside the room. The girl knows that her father is inside the room. Neither of them can speak with each other. But if you think that that girl would stay in St. Louis while her father was in Fort Bragg, you're nuts. There's no way. I can't say a word, can't hear me, I can't hear him, I'm standing there. That's called connection. That's a connection, and it doesn't take words, and it doesn't take sounds, and it doesn't even take, can't even see each other. That's the way you have to view davening. Of course, Chas v'Shalom, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does understand us. I don't mean to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not hearing us. In my situation, the man couldn't hear. But the point is, he's there. He may not answer you right now, or at least you may not hear the answer right now, but he's listening to you and he's right there. What's the point in me talking if I don't hear any response? I don't feel anything. If you realize he's there, plaster yourself up against that wall. Understand he's there. This is as close as you can get to him. He's there, and you need to feel that. But I don't hear a response. You don't always hear a response. You don't always hear a response. That doesn't mean he's not there. He's waiting for you to talk to him. He wants you to talk to him. Avraham Avinu, he tells Avraham Avinu, Lech Lecha, go. And I'm not telling you where you're going. Why wouldn't you tell me where I'm going? You know what? Maybe I want you to ask me. Maybe I want you at some point to turn to me and say, okay, I went as far as I can go now. What's next? What do I do next? What's the next thing that I do? Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu leaves a little space for you to say, what's next? And ask and talk. He wants you to do that. There's a pasuk a little later on in the parasha that tells us that Avraham Avinu, on the way back to Eretz Yisrael, he had gone down to Mitzrayim because there was a famine. On the way back to Eretz Yisrael, Avraham Avinu stopped in every inn that he had stayed in on the way down. He went back through the same inns. And the very famous Chazal that say that if you are more comfortable in the places that you were, you go back to the same places. You don't change your place. You go back to the same places that you were. Step by step, you went down in certain places. Well, maybe there's a better place. Maybe I should try somewhere else. I think it's a certain sense of Akar Sator, a certain sense of Seder. You go back in the same places that you were on the way down. That's what Rashi says, Rashi on the Parsha. Right? It's very, very famous Chazal, famous Rashi. Avraham Avinu on the way back to Eretz Yisrael stopped in the same inns that he had been in on the way when he went down to Mitzrayim. So now he went back to the same places. The next big question that I hear all the time, and I think many of you ask it, is how can I possibly daven Shacharis and say the entire Shemona Esrei, hopefully have wonderful kavanas the whole way through, know what every word means, great, and then you expect me 6 hours later to get up and daven mincha and say the exact same words? And very often, we go to shul, we daven mincha ma'ariv, right after Mincha, there's a little speech, and then there's Ma'ariv, and I'm supposed to say the same exact words again, with Kavana. And then the next morning, I'm supposed to get up and say the same exact words again. There's nothing new in davening. I'm saying the same things over and over and over again. That's a little difficult. If, you know, I get up to Rosh Hashanah comes and they give me a new Shmoneh Esrei, that's interesting. As long as I know what the words mean, I no longer know what's going on, at least I have an opportunity now. My mind is open. I'm able to learn something new. All right? I come to Yom Kippur. I come, you know what, even Tisha B'Av, they give me a little new tefillah to stick in there. If I pay attention a little bit, that's interesting, something new. But come on, how many times could I say Magen Avraham? How many times could I say it? I'm saying the same thing over and over again. So difficult, so difficult. But what's the pshat? Why did Avraham Avinu go and stop in the same places each time? He stopped in the same places each time. Why did he stop in the same place? What happens when you stay in the same place each time? Think about it for a second. You know, my father goes to Eretz Yisrael a lot. My father stays in the same exact hotel. It's like a motel. The same motel each time. None of us, not one person in this room, would ever stay in that motel. It's like a seedy kind of place. But he stays there every time. It's pretty cheap. And he stays there every time. You know what? It's like his hotel already. They know him there. They give him a good room. They give him a better price. He's a regular in that hotel. Believe me, I'm telling you, not one of us would walk in that hotel. We wouldn't want it. It's the center of the city, but it's a perfect location. But it's his place already. He doesn't own one penny of that hotel, but that's his place. Became a little bit, it became his. I hope everybody realizes when they're learning, hopefully as you progress and you're learning, you'll start realizing that the only way to really get someplace in your learning is to review, to do chazara. And chazara can often be extraordinarily boring because it's the same thing. I'm just doing the same thing again. I just did it. I know it already. Why should I review again? The Chazon Ish used to say, people used to come to him and say, I can't remember the Gemara. I can't remember the Gemara. The Chazon Ish said, you know, I also have a very difficult time remembering the Gemara. Usually after 26 or 27 times, I remember it. That was a serious statement. Usually after 26 or 27 times, I remember it, but I also have a hard time before that. You know, anybody ever review a piece of Gemara 27 times? 27 times. The Chazon Ish needed 27 times to get it straight. Sometimes 26. All right? Time number 23 is pretty boring. For most of us, it would be pretty boring. But you know what happens after a while? After a while, but we used to have a guy in this yeshiva. He was in the high school and he was in the yeshiva Gdol. He's in Eretz Yisrael today. He used to sit here and he used to review the first parak of brachos. Every time he had free time, he would review the first parak of brachos. And I'm sure the first time he learned it may have been interesting. The second time he learned it was a little interesting. The third time he learned it started getting boring. By the 150th time that he had reviewed it, it was part of him. It wasn't boring. It was him already. This is me. He knew it almost by heart, word for word, the entire parak, first parak of brachos. This was a kid who was not a particularly bright kid. He just reviewed and reviewed and reviewed and reviewed until it became part of him. Avraham Avinu stops in every place. Why does he stop in every place? Because that's my place. That's where I go. There are other things that you can do to make the davening quote-unquote interesting for you if you're bored because you keep saying it over and over again. But understand that if you keep saying it and it becomes yours and it's part of you, of course you're going to say it. Understand that what davening is your life experience filtering through the davening. And I hope that your life experience constantly changes. Rav Volba in the Ali Shur gives a mashal. If a person is driving up, if you drive to New York, you could see this right now. You drive up to New York, you will see along the highway, along Jersey Turnpike especially, on both sides of the road they plant trees so that the noise doesn't get out. They plant the trees on both sides of the road and all the leaves are turning color. So if you just stand there driving up, that's very beautiful. And if you say to yourself, I just drove for an hour on the New Jersey Turnpike, and I saw all these trees on the side, the red and yellow, gold, unbelievable, all these different colors. And you know what? It was so boring because it was the exact same thing the entire time. I mean, after the first tree, I didn't need to see another tree anymore. But do you understand? Do you realize that there weren't two trees that were the same? There weren't two trees that were the same. Now, if you just look like this with your eyes and you're totally spaced out, yeah, they all sort of look red, yellow, and gold, and finished. That's basically what it looked like. But understand, there are nuances there. There were things that were different. Your life changes as your day goes on. What you knew this morning, you either know more now or less now, depending on how your day went. You know, you're either smarter or not as smart as you were before. Your davening would be different. If you're realizing that's your davening is a little bit different. Okay, davening is a big thing. We won't do everything, but Lot is with Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu says to Lot, me and you, we're not getting along so well. You have a lot of animals, I have a lot of animals, there's not so much room. So Avraham Avinu says to Lot, why don't you choose which way to go? And Lot says, that's a great idea. I don't want to really be around you right now. So I'll pick one way, you pick another way. So Lot picks away, he goes in one direction, Avraham Avinu goes in another direction. And what happens to Lot after that? Downward spiral. Lot ends up in Sodom, and we know what happens after that. Worst decision Lot ever made. Terrible decision, leaving Avraham Avinu. Terrible decision. We all know that the company that we keep is a tremendous thing for us. Whether that's in learning, that's in davening, that's in midos, whatever it is, if you're around people who have terrible midos, it will rub off on you. If you're around people who daven, it will rub off on you. If you're around people who don't learn, you won't. If you're around people who do learn, it's just very hard to fight the current. It's just very hard to go against the flow. It's very hard, very difficult. In a certain sense, we live out of town. We're in Silver Spring. Most of us, the experiences that we have are very, very specific. We daven in the shul, we daven in, we come to the yeshiva that we learn in, and then we go home and we just go back and forth. That's it. That's our experience. Hopefully some of us have relatives other places. We visited other places. Maybe we went on a class trip someplace once. We were in Lakewood once. We were in New Square once. We were somewhere else. Those things are extraordinarily valuable. Sometime, stop in Muncie for Shabbos. Sometime. Daven in Beis Medrash Elyon once. Yeshiva, it's on the main street of Muncie. Daven in Beis Medrash Elyon on a Shabbos morning one time. Do it one time. Watch the 8-year-old kids shuckling. Watch them into davening. See what that's like. See what it's like when an entire room is davening and it's just Ashrei in the morning and they're all roaring. Watch that once in your life. It will have an impact on you. The first time you go there, you'll feel a little weird because I don't fit in here exactly. I don't feel. You know what? Sometime go up the block and daven on a regular Tuesday night, Ma'ariv in Eretz Yisrael. You ever daven Ma'ariv on a Tuesday night with 300 people? Try it. See what it's like. See how long the Shemoneh Esrei goes on a regular Tuesday night Ma'ariv. Just see it. Experience it once in a while. Maybe, if you have some guts, maybe one time in your bar park or you're in Muncie, stop in Stollen. You know what they do in Stollen? They scream the entire davening. And I won't do it because I'm embarrassed. But I mean, they scream the entire davening. The only thing that's quiet is the silent Shemoneh Esrei. Besides that, they are screaming on top of their lungs. Every person in the room, from the first bracha in the morning till the end of davening, screams. You walk in there and you think it's a joke. This must be a joke. There's a joke. Everybody's laughing. I don't get the joke, but they're all screaming. Why are they screaming? You have no idea who the chazan is in the room. Chazan's no louder than anyone else. You know, they sort of got a bang, and then the chazan, it's impossible to figure. Can you just imagine someone screaming the hallelujahs? Screaming on top of his lungs. Okay, it's not our style. But see it once. See what it means when a person cares about davening. See what it looks like I tell you, in Beis Medrash Elyon, you walk in there, and the little kids are davening with kavana, and they're shuckling. I don't know what they're thinking. I don't know what they understand. You understand much more than they do. But they're into it. They're into the davening. Little kids. It's an unbelievable thing. You know that on our trip to Europe, Rabbi Mendelowitz always talks about our trip to Europe. On our trip to Europe, one place we go is to the Ramos Shul in Krakow. This was the shul. The shul is still standing. The shul that the Ramos was in. Ramos died in, I don't remember the exact year, somewhere around 1530, 1540. The Ramos died. His shul is still standing. And there's a little sign. It's a tiny shul. The shul is about the size of this room. Small, very small room. And there's a little sign on the right side. And it says in Hebrew, it says, this is the place where the Ramah used to stand in Davin. This is the spot that the Ramah used to stand in Davin. So I always say when I get there, I don't have the chutzpah to stand in the Ramah's spot. I don't have the chutzpah. I can't stand in the Ramah's place. I wouldn't even sit in Rabbi Einar's place. I certainly wouldn't sit in the Ramah's space. I don't have that chutzpah. However, I get as close as I can. I go real up to it, and I stand there, and I say, you know what? I don't know, but most likely there's a pathway here that goes straight up. You know what I mean? This has been used before. And well, this is unbelievable to stand here and realize you're right next to where the Ramah is standing. You go to the Kursal HaMaravi, understand what's happened there. Understand what a Makom Kaddish is and what that can do for your davening. Stand next to a tzaddik and watch him. Lot said, nah, I can go on my own. I'll be fine. Yeah, I'll move out to Silver Spring. I hope Lot went further than Silver Spring. But sometimes we're isolated a little bit and we don't see what's going on. Watch, you ever stop and say, you know what I'm going to do this davening? Instead of just davening, maybe I'll daven a little earlier, and you know what I'm going to do instead? I'm going to watch Rabbi Einar during davening and see how he davens. Let's watch what he does during davening. Let's watch him. You have a person, an older person, who's sitting and davening in front of the room, been doing it for a long time, who saw unbelievably tremendous people. Just watch for a second. Have you ever stopped to do that? Do you know that when the Manchester Rosh Hashiva, who was a tremendous Goyin and a Tzaddik, came to America once, Manchester's in England, he came to America once, he davened Shachris Vasikin, and after Vasikin, he went to watch the Satmar Rebbe daven. And he sat right in front of the Satmar Rebbe with a sitter and followed along with the Satmar Rebbe as he davened, so he could see. Manchester Rosh Hashiva was not Hasidish, he had nothing to do with Hasidim, but the Satmar Rebbe was a tremendous Tzaddik, and he just wanted to see how he said the words, where he paused. Watch someone daven, watch him, watch him. The worst thing a person could say, I think the worst sentence that a person could say about davening, worst sentence. Unfortunately, you hear it in bad situations, and no one means it in a bad way. I know that no one means it in a bad way, but it's a sad statement about where we're up to, is that a person will say, unfortunately, someone's very sick, or unfortunately, someone is in very, very, very poor financial straits, we're in a very, very difficult situation, and they've tried everything and it hasn't worked. And you'll hear them say, because they're frum, they'll say, all that we have left to do is daven. That's it. That's the only thing left. The doctors, we've asked all the best doctors, there's nothing else to do. All we got left is daven. We went to this bank, to that bank, to try to say, all we could do now is daven. Of course, a Jew davens first. Doesn't daven as a last resort. Davening is not, nothing else worked, so now we'll daven. A Jew davens first. Of course, chas v'shalom, I don't mean to say you shouldn't go to a good doctor. I don't mean to say that you shouldn't try to get yourself out of a difficult situation in normal means, quote-unquote normal means. But davening is not a last resort. It's not the last thing that we do. The Pasuk says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Avraham Avinu in the parasha, V'hem in Bashem, v'yachsheveh lo tzedaka. Avraham Avinu believed in Hashem. He didn't ask for any signs from Hashem. He just believed in Hashem. He connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Do you know that we say in davening? You know what we say? We say an unbelievable thing. It bothers me. From when I'm younger, it bothers me. Just bothers me. We say an unbelievable thing. We say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sein sachar tov l'chol avotchem b'shimcha be'emes. Please give a lot of reward to those people who trust you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there are people out there who trust you tremendously. Give them a tremendous amount of reward. V'sim chalkeinu imahem, and put us with them. Put us with them. I never understood that line. What does that mean, put us with them? Think about it for a second. If I would say to you, please, sir, this man has been doing such a great service for you. He did amazing things for you, sir. Please give him $1 billion. Give him $1 billion. Please, Mr. King, give this man $1 billion because he really helped you. And by the way, I'd also like $1 billion. What did I do to help? Well, because I'm the spokesman. What did I do? What did I do to earn it? That person, I understand. We asked for him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, treat him well. Do you understand? He trusts you. And then I say, and put me with him. What right do I have to go with him? Am I one of those people who has the tremendous bitachon, the tremendous trust in Hashem, or am I not? If I am, then I should go along for the ride. If I'm not, how do I have a right to ask him for it? But you know what we're asking for there? We're not asking for the reward, we're asking for the bitachon, we're asking for the connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'll just tell you a personal story. It happened to me, I was much younger then, and I went through an unbelievably difficult time. An unbelievably difficult time. Crazy time. Maybe it was the most difficult time that I've ever experienced. And I remember that everything came to a head. All the things that were going on at that point came to a head on one Shabbos. It was a Shabbos, and on Shabbos you're supposed to be happy, and on Shabbos you're not supposed to be sad, but this was overwhelming. Everything came to a head on one Shabbos. And I remember that I was in yeshiva then, and there was no way I wasn't sitting at meals and schmoozing. It was just, I was completely overwhelmed. And I remember that I sat the whole Shabbos afternoon and I said to Hillel. And actually, by the end of Shabbos afternoon, I said it slowly. And believe me, I did not know what all the words meant. I just sat there and I was somehow connected. We call that dveikus, connecting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I said to Hillel, by the end of Shabbos, I finished the entire Sefer Tehillim. It's, by the way, a wonderful, wonderful school. If anybody has the patience to actually say the whole Sefer Tehillim in one sitting, it's a tremendous school to say the entire Sefer Tehillim. It's 150 brachim long. It takes a long time. It will not take you shorter than 3.5 hours. It will not take you shorter than three. If you're really, really fast, maybe 3 hours and 15 minutes. Most people will probably take like 4.5 hours. So to sit for 3.5, 4 hours straight saying Tehillim without stopping for anything, just say the whole Tehillim. It's a tremendous, tremendous school. And it's also extremely comforting to say the whole Tehillim, even if you don't know what it all means. But to say it from beginning to end, I remember I sat with the Sefer Tehillim You know, it had like the Malvim on the bottom. I didn't read the Malvim, but I just was straight through. I went through all the pages and I said it slowly. And by the end of Shabbos, I had finished the entire Sefer Tehillim. Okay? I don't even remember 100% how that situation resolved itself. I don't remember exactly what happened. But all I could tell you is that I'm jealous. I'm jealous of myself. I'm jealous of those hours that I sat there connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for whatever it was, 3-4 hours. I'm sitting there now today and saying, I don't wish to be ever in that situation again. Or anything similar. I don't wish that on my worst enemy, that kind of feeling that I had that day. However, the connection that I had with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that day, Vehemin Bashem, Mayachshev Elot, that I was connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for 3-4 hours, just sat there. It was the greatest feeling I ever had. It was unbelievable. I'm really connected. I have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I have a relationship. And I just sat and said to him, I don't know, somebody will tell me, one of the Rabbanim will tell me that on Shabbos, maybe that's not a great idea. Okay, it could be that I wasn't right for doing it exactly that way. Maybe yes, maybe no, we could discuss it. But I'm just trying to tell you that anybody who's experienced a real connection will know that that's the greatest thing in the world. Vehemin, Bashem, Vayachshev Elot Tzedaka. There's much more to talk about. Every one of the things that we talked about, I think we could talk about more. But at least, Mitzvah Hashem, everybody should have a wonderful Shabbos. And maybe their davening should be great on Shabbos. I'll see you on Sunday.